Something like that. That, okay.
And they come in raspberry, blueberry, peach.
Right.
Next time you've got ginger stuff.
Yes, sir. Finally.
Here's the chance.
For some reason, they were a little scarce for a while, the gluten-free ones.
I don't know why.
I don't know. At least I didn't find them.
Oh, they were. They weren't in the store.
Right.
Oh, dear.
They had them at Lucky's today.
Were they on sale? No. On sale at Lucky's? No.
I got something on sale in the cookie department. Mm. I think the pecan ones, the little round ones that are opposite the Snickers.
Well, so I get to talk about joy. We get to talk about joy, which is a lovely treat, actually. And I'd like to do like what Steve did last week. Let's begin with chanting these four immeasurables. And we could do it three times. All right? So may all beings enjoy happiness
and the root of happiness.
May they be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May they not be separated from the great happiness devoid of suffering. May they dwell in the great equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and prejudice. May all things and beings enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. May they be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May they not be separated from the great happiness devoid of suffering. May they dwell in the great equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and prejudice. May all sentient beings enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. May they be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May they not be separated from the great happiness devoid of suffering. May they dwell in the great equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and prejudice. So this week is the sympathetic joy, which is feeling, it's not just joy of your own stuff. Is that on? Yep. It's sympathetic joy, feeling joy in the happiness or good fortune of others. And it's one of the immeasurables because there's no limit, you know, to how much of that joy you can find. So it's like really awesome. And I had a lovely example of it play out in front of my house a couple nights ago. You know, I live in a cul-de-sac. Mm-hmm. And another family living in the cul-de-sac has a little boy who's about 3 years old. Mm. And his mother bought him a push cycle. It's like a little imitation bicycle. It has little handlebars and little wheels and a seat, but it's not yet dealing with pedals and chains and all that stuff. So you just sit on it and scoot along. And he was all dressed up with his elbow pads and his crouch. And he was a little hesitant, you know, at first. And then actually he mastered it. Something clicked.
Yeah.
And he was able to, like, scoot along, you know, like 10 or 15 feet at a time. And this is where I choke up. I'm sorry. But anyway, his mother was just cheering.
Yeah.
This is great. This is so wonderful. You're getting to be such a big boy. It's just, you know, excellent. You know? And I was practically in tears, you know, myself.
Yeah.
Even though I was just eavesdropping on their moment of joy, you know. But that shows how it is. I mean, it's like for both of the people involved, it's like when you are feeling joy and someone sympathizes with your joy, that really raises you, you know, increases your own joy. And then for the mother, you know, to have that joy in the development of her son, you know, that's like just wonderful, you know. And even like a bystander like me, you know, it just sort of gave me that feeling of joy for the next couple of days, you know. I mean, it's just so nice.
I would like to talk a little bit about how this relates to the other immeasurables too, because I think that's important to have that clear. 2 weeks ago, Bill talked about loving kindness, like wanting other beings to be happy. And that's really the basis of it all. I actually think of it as like a, like almost geometrically, like a square. And the loving kindness is like the base. And then on one side you have compassion, which is opening your heart to the suffering of others. And on this side we have sympathetic joy, opening your heart to the joy of others. And like a, if you have this two sides sitting up alone, they're a little bit unstable. Because undisciplined compassion can kind of edge off into despair or burnout or something. And undisciplined joy can kind of go into some kind of like spacey idiot joy, you know, that's just mindless joy, bliss, kind of stupid bliss. So then next week, Melissa will talk about equanimity, which I think is the top of the square, and it kind of anchors those two sides and makes it all stable. Yeah. That's my own mental image. I don't know. I've never read that anywhere, but I like that. And sympathetic joy, well, all of them really, but especially sympathetic joy, are about connection. Like in the chant, it talks about may they not be separated from. It's when you're separated that you don't have joy. When you are connected with an open heart, that's when you have the joy. Yeah. I don't know. There's so much to say. I want to have time for actual discussion, but let me just talk for a little couple more minutes. I think it's important for this joy to be not intellectual. I mean, it's actually practical, grounded. That's I was warning a moment ago about the sort of mindless bliss thing. The joy that the other person is feeling has to be real for you to be really in sympathy with it. It doesn't have to be like this huge, profound thing. I mean, for a little kid with a push cycle or all kinds of other things. I mean, and it doesn't have to be anything that is your joy in any sense at all. Like one of my other neighbors on the same cul-de-sac just recently got himself a nice big red, beautiful red pickup. He loves that pickup. You know, and he washes it, and it's like, that pickup gives him joy, you know? And it's not, like, I don't particularly, you know, I'm not into pickups, you know, so it's not my thing, but I can see that it's his thing, you know, and so that's fine, that's great. But it doesn't have to be profound. It doesn't have to be about, you know, winning Nobel Prizes or things like that. It's very immediate, very practical. And I thought we might talk a little bit about the obstacles to joy, because that's what gets it kind of interesting. Like, why do we not just routinely do it? Sharon Salzberg, in her book Loving Kindness, has a long section about all the obstacles to feeling joy, which were kind of opening, eye-opening for me. Like, one of them is when you get trapped in being judgmental. Like, have you ever had the experience where somebody is doing something that you think is completely misguided? Like, they should not do that. And it works out very nicely. And you're left with this, sort of, well, oh, really? Kind of feeling, you know? And so you would, if you were not kind of trapped in your judgmentalness, you could feel the joy that it worked out for them, you know? But because of your being judgmental, you're kind of more have a tendency of like, ooh, I'm not comfortable with that. Tricky. And similarly is like when you get trapped in comparisons. That's another one that Sharon Salzberg names it. Like comparisons, like, you know, this person is, oh, you know, more attractive than me. This person is richer than me. This person is smarter than me. This person is sexier than me. This person is not as fat as me. You know, you can always run down that list. And there's always going to be people who, on any one thing that you pick out, there's going to be plenty of people who exceed you in that dimension. So if you get trapped there, it is like being trapped. It's like, you know, cowering behind a wall instead of letting the wall come down and opening yourself to the joy that is there. That's very interesting. Yeah, I'll name one more, and then we could maybe just talk, which is envy. And that kind of got me, because I'm not in the habit of thinking of myself as an envious person. But when she was kind of describing it, I'm like, oh, that is me. You know, it's like when you feel like, when you feel excluded, when you feel like the people over there are having a party and you're standing here with your nose pressed against the glass watching from outside, out in the cold, you know. I didn't use the word envy for that feeling, but that's exactly what it is. I mean, I'm envious of the people inside. And because you're trapped in envy, you're trapped in your own stuff instead of opening yourself to their stuff. And there you are. You're cutting yourself off from the sympathetic joy. Let me stop talking here and ask what you all think of this. I mean, do you have other things you can think of that are obstacles to joy?
I was thinking of that kind of depression or that kind of person that walks around with the, in general, oh, woe is me. And seems to notice mostly the negatives in their life. Somehow they often miss out on joy, sympathetic joy, I think.
I think that's right. I mean, certainly if you're really, like, clinically depressed, if you're psychologically depressed, then it's just impossible to even connect with any such thing. But I think even if you're not like at that level, just an ordinary person walking around, you tend to get in the habit of like thinking about your troubles instead of thinking about all the wonderful things that are around you.
So at that point sometimes others' joys seem painful rather than feeling empathy for them.
Painful, and I think part of that is envy. Like, you know, the pain is that I don't have that, they have that, you know.
Yeah, and that's the sort of, for me, that's sort of like an unworthiness thing. I felt a lot of that right after the divorce, my divorce. And, you know, I'd see all these young people get, you know, this all this sexual energy between them, and I'm sitting there, exactly that feeling of feeling like the outsider. Unable to appreciate the just young people being young people, you know. I was definitely all about me, and you know, it was just it was not a happy time for me. And I don't know if I could have avoided that in any way, but but it was a big projection of my own hurt, you know, out there, kind of. So,
I mean, what occurs to me when you say that is sort of going back to the loving kindness part. Like, if you are cut off from feeling loving kindness to yourself, then by definition you can't connect with someone else and appreciate those two kids walking down the street, you know.
I mean, it's really quite sweet, you know, but it's like, I mean, I had to do a lot of work with my own self with that. And when you're talking about the thing of envy or comparison or something, but I remember when I left music school, well, I'll admit, I dropped out. And I remember this tremendous feeling of relief that I didn't have to be comparing myself to the other students anymore. I could just appreciate them. Because before it was always who's best. Yeah. You know, I mean, that was the atmosphere there. It was like set up that way. So, but it was like, ah, what a relief. You know, it was just like, oh, I can just listen to their music and appreciate all the work they put into it. And, you know, just. It was like less junk in my head, you know. It was just right there when that pressure wasn't on.
That's think I liked your image of the loving kindness as the base, and building up from that, because it does feel like these other things wouldn't be possible if you weren't able to feel loving kindness for yourself or others.
It seems like that's the anecdote to the obstacles. You know, what I thought of with the three that you mentioned, judgmental, comparisons, and envy, really behind all of that is, I think, is, you know, unworthiness or insecurity, feeling not enough, not something's wrong with, shame, you know, just, you know, I experienced that recently, you know, just really strongly, and when I was able to sort of really let it just be, then that's what I did, was place it, you know, in the cradle of loving kindness, and it was like, I just could have wept, you know. I didn't because of the circumstances I was in, but, you know, inside I was weeping, and it was an obstacle to joy, you know, by kind of being, and it was comparison is what I was doing, and, you know, so the anecdote, you know, was and just being kind to myself. Yes, of course you feel that way, you know, there's causes and conditions of that. It's a tender place, and, you know, just sort of staying with that, and you know, I can't say that, well, that I was necessarily had joy, but I definitely had a shift from the heaviness and the, you know, and for just being stuck, so.
Yeah, I think one of the words that sticks out for me is sympathetic.
Yeah.
It's like, just feeling joy in someone else's joy is just very simple in a way. It's like, somebody's happy there, it's like, there's no, and those barrier things seem really, like, you know, the walls, like you said, the wall that keeps you from just experiencing what's going on.
It's interesting, because I thought, I have trouble with the word sympathy, and I like empathy.
Sympathy.
That I could, right away, I knew what they were.
Empathetic joy.
But sympathetic joy was a little bit more...
Loaded?
Well, just...
Didn't seem like...
Has another connotation.
So
are you saying, like, sympathy is like, oh, you poor... It's a bad... You know, you poor, bad, unhappy person.
Yeah. When I think of sympathy, I think of feeling sorry for somebody.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
I don't think that's what the sense of this word is.
I think that's not what they're meaning at all, but that's how, when I see that word, you know, we have sympathy cards, we have all kinds of stuff.
But sympathy going with joy is, like, really different. That's why it stood out for me.
Yeah, so I was intrigued to come tonight, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Is it sympathy also? There are sympathetic responses to things, right? Mm-hmm. That are.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's like the way it's really meant. If something happened over here, and there's a sympathetic response over here, which is the joy. Mm-hmm. Joy here gets a sympathetic response of joy over here, as opposed to feeling sorry.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I understand that, but that was why I...
Different meaning of sympathetic. Yes.
What does parasympathetic mean? You know, like your parasympathetic nervous system, does it have anything?
I think that means, like, unconscious
Right, it does,
stuff.
It's not...
But, like, the sympathetic stuff that he's talking about is, like, neuroscience. They've seen that, like, in chimpanzees and everything.
Oh, yes.
You know, absolutely.
Yes.
If a chimpanzee watches another chimpanzee get a food treat, the first chimpanzee that is sort of a little bit of his brain lights up.
Right.
You know. To say, treats. I wanted to touch on one other thing, too, which is I've been just looking around at joy, you know. So, like, what do you think of, like, watching a football game? And at the end of the football game, there's one side that wins, and there's side that loses. And the people that win are, you know, joyous, and the people that lose are sitting slumped in their seats.
Well,
you know,
you do both. You got the sympathetic joy and the compassion.
I guess it's balanced in some way, but But yeah, I always hated competitive sports because of the losers. I just could never quite.
It breaks my heart, like mostly like at the Olympics, when you see someone who's just devoted 10 years of their life to like,
more than 10.
You know, doing this, and they come in fourth.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like.
Yeah. I know. Ice skating.
I know, it's like, and they're so good at what they do.
They're just superb, and they come in, you know, fourth.
Yeah,
you know,
because there's somebody who is better. I hate that. Mm.
Yeah. Or just that something happened,
right?
Just that day.
Right. Yeah, right.
That just they couldn't make it. Their top
nerves and the pressure. You know, it's tremendous.
I think if we all were. I don't. What will we say? Participating in, or experiencing, or being part of other people's joy, the world would be such a more joyous place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have this problem. I always think about movies because movies give us experiences that we often don't want in life. You go to a movie and see terrible things happening. But we go.
Mm-hmm. I don't.
You know, we go to see these things. And it's sort of like you've got the, you know, the four immeasurables and the loving kindness and the compassion and the sympathetic joy. And supposedly these are mind states of the Buddha. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's almost like, first of all, you can't have joy without suffering, I would think. I mean, what's if nothing bad ever happened, would you be happy, or what would it be like? And so maybe, you know, the First Noble Truth says life is suffering. Mm-hmm. And so we have that. And so that makes the compassion part, well, easy to come by, right? Mm-hmm. But somehow it seems as though you have to have both. Mm-hmm. You know, without the suffering, you don't have the joy, and so without the compassion, you won't have the sympathetic joy, and so maybe it's incomplete without all of it.
Wow.
You were kind of saying that they need to balance each other.
Well, I mean, what I'm thinking, you were just almost quoting Nietzsche, which I didn't expect to get into tonight.
Oh, okay.
But he talked about this thing called amor fati, you know, love of fate. Uh-huh. And like, how if there is no God, if God is dead and all that, then what? How can you engage with life? You know, what? How could you possibly do something like that? And his answer is amor fati, you know, the love of fate. Just the treasuring the incredible richness of life, including the bad parts.
Yeah.
You know, that has to be part of it. Otherwise, as you say, it would be meaningless.
Yeah.
You know, like we don't really normally feel joy about the fact that we're breathing because we take that for granted.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's under special circumstances. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you're coming out of surgery after having a lung removed, then you feel joy in breathing.
Yeah.
But,
or meditating.
Yeah.
You can feel some joy.
Focusing on the breath.
Yeah.
But you mentioned earlier movies, like we go to see movies to see things we wouldn't want for ourselves.
Yeah.
And I immediately went to Shakespearean tragedies. I mean, we go to see a really, you know, poignant tragedy, and we like that feeling of connecting and crying and, you know, like tears coming to your eyes and just feeling that deep kind of whatever twist of being alive, you know, and we want to feel that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how that ties in with the rest of what you're saying, but somehow it seems necessary.
Yeah. It's incomplete without all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if we can't get in our ordinary humdrum lives, then we'll go watch a Shakespeare tragedy.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you just touched on something right there, which is one of the things I wanted to talk about is boredom, because Sharon Salzberg talks about boredom as how it relates to joy. I mean, first of all, joy is the antidote to boredom, but also boredom is sort of what prevents you from joy sometimes, because you're sort of not tuned into what's going on, and all you see is the same old stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because artists, you know, creative people say, I mean, writers and whatever say that you need to sit with your boredom and not go get entertained.
Yes.
Before you can start to be creative. Uh-huh. So you kind of have to sit through it, and which is different from like being bored and then just like trying to squirm away from it.
Change the channel and find something more interesting.
Yeah.
So is someone who's mildly depressed, are they bored? There's boredom in that, I think.
I think they're trapped in their perception.
Does the boredom come first, or is it a result of depression?
Boredom is a kind of fear, I think. It's a fear
of nothingness.
Or
sameness.
A meaninglessness, or I don't know. Or just your brain wants something to latch on to, and it has nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, kids get bored. But, Mom, I'm bored.
So if you come to life with some of the kind of attentiveness that you get on the cushion, then you can certainly find more joy. This is where I begin to be a little bit nervous, though, talking about the kind of idiot bliss stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I was watching a few days ago, I was out on a walk and saw a lovely hawk soaring in the sunshine.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, it's very tempting for me to just look at that hawk and say he was feeling joy, you know, just in being a hawk, you know.
Yeah.
And then the scientific part of me says, well, no, actually, he's looking for mice. He's looking for game. You know, it's completely anthropomorphic for me to say that hawk is feeling joy.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know.
If nobody had ridden a car before and they got in a car and you're going, you know, down a wonderful road and it's curvy and it feels weird and good, and they would say that's joyful, but then we just do it. We don't think twice about it.
Yeah.
You know? It's like every day.
Or terrifying.
Yeah, terrifying. Well, yeah, terrifying is part of it. But we have to go on roller coasters to feel.
I think that I feel like the point you were making, that there are all these obstacles to joy,
mm-hmm.
is really important, because it points up, you know, when we look at the obstacles to joy, it just points up so many things that we cling to in our lives that are counterproductive. I don't like that word, but not what we really want in our hearts. You know, if we really care, then we look at those things and we think, oh, of course that's an obstacle to joy, and it's an obstacle to living well in any sense. And so it's like a wake-up call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good thing. Yeah, it's like, I'm feeling some envy here. That could be a flag that I'm not accepting.
And watch out that it doesn't tip over into shame. You know, like, what's wrong with me that I have all this good stuff and I'm still miserable? You know,
it's a
bad path to be on. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but just like, wow, I must be feeling kind of not kind to myself or something. You know, like start looking that
not
way.
Not tuned in.
Not too much.
For sure.
I think that happens when people, for instance, I hope people are not going to take this wrong, but I experienced a certain amount of joy when my mother died because of the circumstances.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've watched this the Vikings. You know, they have to die a violent death to be happy.
Oh, they're not honored unless they die.
Right, and that it's all about honor for them and their joy. But what I really am trying to say is that there are things that give people joy, and if you feel joy and someone is thinking it's inappropriate, for instance, you know, you're not grieving like maybe you should be, or whatever, there's prescribed kind of things that don't let you feel joy
in your culture.
Right.
In a particular culture.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
and
I think
it's a measure of your getting better sometimes when you really can't stop yourself from feeling happy for something.
I think part of this is we still have cultural resonance of the old Puritan stuff going all the way back, you know, so that anything that is pleasant must therefore be sinful. You know, so feeling joy is like at least it's in bad taste, and it may actually be sinful, you know, to feel joy, if you're really in that kind of Puritan, you know, mind.
It's like self-flagellation.
Thing.
And you're going to pay for it by being sent to hell.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you can't enjoy
where everybody has a good time.
Yeah, and
what, Carol?
I was just going to say, you can't be joyful because of original sin.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Right.
No, you'll never be joyful.
Never be joyful.
You'll without never have, you'll outside never have help. A vine tree for yourself.
So,
yeah.
It's very destructive.
Yeah. It's the whole idea of if you're not going to be a good person unless you're under, unless you're controlled very tightly.
I love your story about the little kid. You know, I was reminded of a friend of mine had come to visit, and we were hiking, and her daughter was maybe four or five. It was just a little short hike, and she was going along, and I kind of can't remember. But she was just, and then she fell and hit her knee, and she started to cry. You know, she hurt her knee, and she said, and I was so happy. We all laughed. Mom said she's a bit of a Sarah Bernhardt, but she wasn't. She was just saying, one minute I was hiking in the, you know, and the next minute, you know, but I was so happy. She was just
destroyed her happiness, and as sad
about the fact that she was so happy and
her
now
happiness
she
is gone.
Yeah, and it was just so sweet. There was such a sweetness that I can still remember exactly where it was on the trail, and you know, all of, and we were kind of like, you know, you don't want to laugh at that.
Yeah, right, but you're right.
It was so, so pure and sweet.
Well, I had that experience last night because Eli, Carolyn's son, was attended a birthday dinner for my son that we had. And it was a big deal for Eli. He was really excited. They were there early. They were the first ones there.
There was going to be birthday cake?
There wasn't birthday cake.
Oh, there wasn't? Oh, okay.
But, and my granddaughter brought my great-granddaughter. And at first, Eli was like, you know, and then before we knew it, somebody said, oh, you just look at her and say something. See if you can get her to smile. And when she smiled, he just lit up.
Aww.
He just lit up. And then from then on, he was like making faces. But, you know, it was really to see that, because it actually was an example, because both of them, she was smiling and he was smiling. So it was really cute, really nice.
Mm-hmm. I do think we're hardwired for caring and connection. Yeah. You know? Happens, you know, there's joy. There's
babies are so easy for that. That's why everybody loves babies.
Yeah, but it's sort of an ego that gets in the way. You know, it's like a lot of people, you know, somebody comes and tells you, I just got a raise at work today, and if it's your best friend, it's just wonderful. And if it's that idiot down the road, well, what the hell do you give him a raise? You know? You know, so it's, why do we do that?
Yeah, we want to do the practice in a few minutes where you expand out to the different.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's always, you know, challenging when you get to the one that is what they say your enemy.
Yeah.
Can you feel joy for someone that really pushes a lot of your buttons?
I have the hardest time with the neutral. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't figure out how to feel anything for somebody that I'm sort of, you know.
Yeah.
Well, like my neighbors, I mean, the little kid on his push cycle. I mean, I don't even know their names, you know. So
in
that sense,
I'm actually think I'm different. I'm sort of literal, so neutral is almost like non-entity. I know what it really is. It's the store clerks, and, you know, it's those people that you that we talked about before. But I still have kind of some issues with that.
Well, I have noted that you can't, it's really hard to connect with someone that you feel fear for in any dimension, you know.
Yeah.
So like homeless people who may be kind of worthy of compassion, and yet they're kind of frightening sometimes with the way they look and the way they smell, and, you know, the whole thing.
And are they alcoholic?
Yeah.
Are
they drug addicts? And how can you give them anything? Are you require them to use it in a way that you would approve of? Like if you give them a dollar or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very, very tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there are greater fears too. I mean, I know a woman who couldn't, in therapy, you know, just imagine talking to her mother. No matter what happened, well, let's put your mother in the other room. She could not do that because her mother was so terrifying to her. And you know what? I was like, she's too scary. You know, she's just way too abusive, and you can't, there's no connection.
But, you know, when you said we're hardwired for that, I think that's part of it. And the other part of it is we're culturized. Like that little girl, fortunately, nobody really laughed at or said, oh, come on.
Yeah. We're culturized for what?
You know, but
right,
allowed. Because I was a crier when there were things going on, and I always got...
Me too.
...ridiculed for it.
Oh, really?
So,
trying being a little boy who cries. That's that's a trip.
Big boys don't cry. Big girls don't cry either.
I mean, and I say that with no hint of disrespect for the suffering of the little girls.
Yeah.
But I do think in that particular dimension, boys have it even maybe a shade harder.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure. That's why men are so screwed up.
When you mentioned the Vikings, you know, I wanted to say, you know, I don't know if it's joy and dying violently as it is as much as it's toxic masculinity. That's what it sounds like.
Okay, yeah.
Our Viking nature.
Social pressure.
It's our culture.
It's a social pressure to be, you know, just invincible.
Brave.
Be
sensitive. It's all about bravery.
And people would rather die than be ostracized. You know, I mean, that's actually a human fact. That you know, if they're afraid of being ostracized, they'd rather just...
Well, perhaps it's time to do the actual practice. Okay, before we do, one last question, which is like in a lot of these practices where we expand out, you're encouraged to start with yourself.
Yeah.
So there's a question. Is it appropriate to feel sympathetic joy for yourself? Is it even possible? Or what would that mean?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Maybe is it really... participating fully in joy without a part of you standing over here saying, oh, watch out, something bad's going to happen next. You know the way in Asian cultures you never talk about anything good because the gods could send you something bad if you do.
Yeah.
And the fear that the joy is not going to last.
Yes.
And the worry that somebody else is going to come and mess it up for you. I mean, I think my feeling is like it's really experiencing it fully without all those other worries.
Right, without complicating it.
Yeah.
Without just being afraid you're going to fall and hurt your knee.
Yeah.
And I think there is another piece of the answer too, which is that, you know, I talked about earlier how when you feel joy, other people are spontaneously made joyous by that. So that means directly, if you're a person who can never feel joy, even for himself, you just walk around under a cloud, it's not going to be any benefit to other people to have you around. I mean, just put it coldly. I mean, you have to have enough take your seat to manifest joy to be able to kind of let other people feel it. Welcome them to feel the joy that they might have trouble connecting with.
I mean, look at the Dalai Lama. Anybody in his presence just feels that.
Yeah.
You know,
well, just looking at him, looking at a lot of those teachers is like that. Because they're...
But it wakens it up in us, you know, is what I'm saying. You know,
It's like you know it's possible or something.
Yeah.
And then
it just touches your own, maybe.
I think it's also... A lot of these things can be in your head. And the four immeasurables are strictly experiential.
Yeah.
So the joy can be in your head. and doing this brings it more into a bigger experience.
More like what you were describing, where
your
whole being is
feeling
joyful or full of joy.
Yeah. So it's not that you've got this stuff going on up here. It says, boy, am I lucky. Aren't things
No, you're just
It just drops. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And when you are, I mean, I haven't had a lot, but when I have felt, there is this propensity of sending it out, sharing it, giving it to the world, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, just a generosity that comes naturally from that.
Comes naturally.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe it's two directional. You know, sympathetic joy is how I feel when you're happy, but it's how I expand to you when I'm happy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's good.
The cosmic mirror.
The cosmic mirror, right?
Yes.
What'd you say, Tree?
I said it's that cosmic mirror
that
we live in. Huh. Or at least in this.
Okay. Well, let's do it now, I suggest. So settle in your seat and let yourself be here in this moment with us all together. Let your mind settle. Be in your body. And now take someone who is very easy to feel sympathetic joy for. It may be yourself. It may be someone who is dear to you. And just think of that person and think of a time when they were feeling joy, when they were having good fortune or at least just satisfaction. Think about, let yourself feel how that makes you feel to connect with their joy. Yeah, and if you were if the circumstance was that you could share your joy with them, how did that go? Did they feel more joyous because you were there with them, sympathizing? And just let yourself really feel that joy. Let yourself be open to it. We're not being intellectual here, we're being opening our hearts. See how it makes you feel, like in your body. How does it feel to feel joy? What is that like? Let's broaden out a little bit. Think of someone that you're basically neutral about. You're aware of this person, but you don't really care about them. You have no particular connection. Was there a time when you noticed that they were actually, you know, for whatever reason, happy? And how was that? How did it make you feel? What did you do in response to that person being joyous? If anything, maybe nothing. But how did it make you feel, at least? Now let's think of a person who gives you trouble. A person, I don't know if you want to use the word enemy, but just someone that really bothers you, pisses you off. And here I think the important thing is to be honest. Like if you find that you can't find it in yourself to like wish joy to them, then back away a little and just think about that. But maybe you can. Maybe you can find enough common humanity that you're actually willing to let them have some joy in their life. I mean, do you hate them so much that you wish they were in misery every moment? Or would it be okay if sometimes they had good times? And if you can't find any way to reach, send joy to them, how does that make you feel? Whereas if you could kind of connect to them at some level, how does that make you feel? If you can relate to some joy of theirs, how does that make you feel? This person who is so difficult. Spread out a little bit further to whatever feels comfortable, something like either just the people in this room or maybe the people in Longmont or whatever. Now think about the people in Longmont right at this moment. There's probably quite a bit of joy going on along with the other things happening. Probably at this moment there are two teenagers walking along the street holding hands and feeling this immense surge of joy. Or there's probably, it doesn't have to be people, there's probably a couple of dozen dogs wagging their tails at this moment because the owner just came home. And that dog is just filled with joy at that moment. Uncomplicated, unfeigned, unmotivated joy. Let yourself feel that joy. Maybe there probably is somebody in town who got a raise today. And they're feeling that kind of joy. Somebody got a new car. You know. Somebody's watching a TV show and they're really thrilled by it. You know. I mean, whatever. All of those joys are there. If you can, expand out even further. Just touch on the idea of feeling the joy of everyone in the world. How amazing that is. There are people being born today, and new parents, you know, meeting their baby for the first time. And there may be people feeling joy in the midst of really painful circumstances. You know, like if you're in some third world country and you can't get steady access to good food, but today you got hold of some food and so your children are going to bed with full bellies, how joyous that is. For this one night at least, they're happy, they're full. Just let yourself feel that joy. And maybe include non-humans, like the dogs wagging their tails, and the whales jumping out of the ocean just for the pleasure of it. Everything. And in your own time, let's come back to the room here. Almost out of time. Anyone have any comments?
Yeah, I've been not able to have really feel the things in my body the last two times we've been doing it.
Yeah.
But today I did, and especially remembering a time when a person that I have a difficulty with was happy, mm-hmm. just made me feel so more comfortable to have that person be part of my life. Usually I'm like just resisting that person and critical of absolutely everything she does, very judgmental. Mm-hmm. And I was able to feel like, oh, wow, I could really be, I'm really feeling good for her. I'm really feeling, remembering how happy she was, I'm just really feeling like, oh, I'm so happy. It's really great. I hope I can feel that way next time I'm around her.
Well, we're not sprinkling matches here.
No.
It is very contagious, though. The further out you took us, the lighter I was beginning to feel. Mm-hmm. I was starting out, and I had this thought, oh, that's what they call why they say things like, teachers say, warm fuzzies and cold pricklies, because there is actually that sensation of warmth that comes in or ignites.
I was remembering when I went to my great-nephew's soccer game last Saturday, and when the little boys made a goal, it was incandescent joy all over the field.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah. It's also clear that the practice is, we have four immeasurables, and you can, it's a, I guess the way to do it is like here, you start out with a sympathetic joy, but then you run into troubles. Mm-hmm. and you look to see where the troubles came from, and then you can like apply compassion to yourself, because I can't do it for this jerk.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you can sort of play around with all of them.
Bring them all into your practice.
Yeah.
Yes,
and the others is, as I just said, it's a part of it is watching yourself to mm-hmm. see what's going on mm-hmm. and responding to it.
It's more like what they talk about so much now, called the felt sense, the mm-hmm. watching, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I get stuck if I think I'm watching mm-hmm. myself too much.
Right, yeah. Just more paying attention.
But, some kind of...
Well, I was
witnessing.
Yeah, I was the negative person. Was I went for the jugular. I did Trump,
mm-hmm.
and and it was really hard, you know, but then I guess there's just some little, maybe it was a step back from the just absolute, but it was like, God, if he could feel some peace and mm-hmm. just some happiness,
yeah.
you know, and I don't think he does.
No, no.
You yeah. know, I don't think he feels very, very safe at all, mm-hmm. you know, and I just felt some compassion there. Mm-hmm. Not that I think, you know, I could even begin to share anything with him like that, because it felt also very dangerous mm-hmm. and unsafe territory.
The person I had also has kind of an unsafeness to them and, you know, extreme dislike and haven't, you know, nothing to do with this individual. But I was able to think, he likes his bees. He's a beekeeper. You know, so I could kind of touch that place. But, like, and that was good enough. I was glad I was able to sort of do that. Because I've often thought, well, to allow to somehow soften would be a dangerous thing, you know. But I could at least relate. You know, I was pleased that I could do that. I could get that image and feel some, you know, of his joy.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. In that situation.
Yes, in that situation. Yeah, yeah, bees. You know, it's like,
yeah, I guess I could have thought of golf for a mm-hmm.
but I just want to mention there's a really rich article in this issue of Lion's Roar mm-hmm. magazine. A woman talking about loneliness, of all things, mm-hmm. and she relates it to the four immeasurables.
Yeah. Oh.
And it's like part of the reason she's lonely is that she has some kind of medical condition, so she can't get out much. And all of her family except her went to the amusement park. They went to like Disneyland or something. And she was sitting, you know, alone. And you know, and then she got to the, well, compassion, you know, for herself. But then also she climbed to joy and just thought about how much fun they were probably having at that moment. Mm-hmm. And that they were kind of having fun kind of for her in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, she was able to kind of channel it. And mm-hmm.
yeah.
Really interesting.
Huh.
Yeah, because you don't. I would not have imagined that. You know, where? What should I talk about for four immeasurables? Oh, I know, loneliness. That's it. but she did, and it's yeah. very nice.
Wow,
it
good.
Reminds
Thank
me
you.
Of that book, How to Be Sick.
Yeah,
that woman talks about that too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's really great.
I wanted to mention that just because we're sitting here together in a circle doing this. At the first going out, for mm-hmm. before we went all the way out to Longmont,
yeah.
I had this just really huggy feeling
yeah.
of being in this circle with
mm-hmm. all of us experiencing mm-hmm. joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Warm fuzzy. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is completely off the topic, but I just wanted to mention it. In this month or 2 month, whatever it is, issue of Tricycle. Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful article about anger.
Yeah.
So that was off the subject, but I just wanted to mention it.
Okay.
How to practice, four ways to practice mm-hmm. in the midst of anger.
Maybe a reminder that Bill and I will be out of town
nope.
Turn this doing off. Saturdays.